Open your Bibles with me to 2 Samuel. We'll look tonight with the Lord's help at the rise of David as king. One thing I want you to notice and interesting point to grasp hold of as we bring our minds back up to speed as to where we've been. Remember, the children of Israel had been down in Egypt, and they grew into a great nation. The promise of God to Abraham is that you'll be a great nation, and you'll be a mighty nation. Down in Egypt, they grew, so much so that the Egyptians looked out over the nation of Israel and said, wow, we got to do something about this. They could rise up against us. And they began to put them under rigorous tasks. And all that did was cause them to grow more. But what it also did is prepare them to leave. They cried unto the Lord to leave Egypt, and the Lord heard their cry and raised up Moses and led them out of Egypt. And what should have been just a very brief journey over to Canaan land turned out to be a 40-year trek through the wilderness as that generation died because they were disobedient. They came right up to the edge and saw the promised land, and 10 out of the 12 spies said, we can't take the land. And so that whole generation died. Joshua and Caleb lived through it because they were the two that said, yes, we can take the land. God has given us the land. And then Joshua was tapped by God to be Moses' successor, and Joshua leads them into the promised land, and they have a good period of time under the leadership of Joshua, and they conquer many nations, and they go in and take the land of Canaan, and yet there are always seemingly a few stragglers that are left behind of the Amalekites and Jebusites and Perizzites and Hittites and all those ites. And they always come back to be a thorn in the flesh of the people of God. Through the period of the judges, we saw God raise up judge after judge after judge, leading them. The cycles of the children of Israel would be such that they would wander from God and get into pagan religions, and God would chastise them and get them in some sort of bondage or under some sort of oppression, and then God would raise up a judge and deliver them out of that. And that happened seven times, several different judges. And then the people started to clamor for a king. They wanted to be like all the other nations. And what God had pointed out to Samuel was that they haven't rejected you, the last judge. They've rejected me as their king. And they selected Saul. Saul was head and shoulders above everybody else in stature. A mighty man of war. Seemed to start off with a very good ministry, if you will. Call it a ministry. Seemed to start off humble and desiring to follow God. There's a particular story in 1 Samuel 15 that God told him to take the Amalekites and utterly destroy them, destroy their kings, destroy everything. Don't leave one sheep. Don't leave one pig, nothing. And they didn't do that. Saul fought, they won, but they saved some. They saved the kings, they saved some of the best of the herds. Said it's going to be a sacrifice to God. Samuel said to Saul, what does God want more? Does he want your feeble sacrifice? Seeing he owns the cattle on a thousand hills, does he really need your sacrifice? Or does he want your heartfelt obedience? And God rejected Saul shortly thereafter. But in that day, especially, Saul continued to reign as king in the eyes of the people, leading the Israelite men to war and all that went on. He was perceived to be their king. God had rejected him. God had led Samuel to anoint David. And David knew that he would one day succeed after Saul was done. But he didn't know when. Saul continues to battle, fight, and carry on, defending the children of Israel and so on. And in, let's pick up the story then. In 1 Samuel 31, we find the death of Saul. Remember, Saul had been rejected probably at least 7 years now as king. It would appear as though from David's anointing the first time under Samuel to the death of Saul appears to be around 7 years. So David's patiently in the background. Meanwhile, remember, Saul's trying to kill him. You know, meanwhile, Saul's chasing him around with javelins and stuff, trying to kill him. David knows he's next in line to the throne. The people of Israel think Saul's sons are next in line to the throne. They're not completely seeing the picture yet. But at the end of 1 Samuel, we have the account of Saul in battle, sorely wounded, and feeling as though he had been disgraced, feeling as though he'd probably mortally wounded, falls on his sword. That's in verse 4, 1 Samuel 31, verse 4. And Saul said to his armor bearer, "Draw thy sword and thrust me through therewith, lest the uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me." But his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took the sword and fell upon it. When his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword. So Saul died, and his three sons, and his armor bearer, and all his men that same day together. Now, 2 Samuel 2 comes along, or 2 Samuel 1 comes along, and an Amalekite comes to David and tells him a little story about this death. Now, look at verse 5, 2 Samuel 1 and verse 5. David said unto the young man that told him, "How knowest thou that Saul and Jonathan his son be dead?" And the young man that told him said, "As I happened by chance upon Mount Gilboa, behold, Saul leaned upon his spear, and lo, the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. And when he looked behind him, he saw me and called unto me, and I answered, 'Here am I.' And he said unto me, 'Who art thou?' And I answered him, 'I am an Amalekite.' And he said unto me again, 'Stand, I pray thee, upon me and slay me, for anguish has come upon me, because my life is yet a whole in me.' So I stood upon him and slew him, because I was sure that he could not live after that he was fallen. And I took the crown that was upon his head and the bracelet that was upon his arm, and have brought them thither to my lord." And David took hold on his clothes and rent them, and likewise all the men that were with him. What it would seem to me, there's a little bit of a discussion amongst the theologians as to reconciling the end of 1 Samuel and the beginning of 2 Samuel. What it would seem to me, the most plausible explanation is that Saul fell upon his sword and died, yes. But as he was dying, this Amalekite came along, and right there towards the very end of Saul's life, Saul asked him to finish him off. Some suppose that the Amalekite completely made up the story to impress David. David had been chased by Saul. David had been oftentimes on the receiving end of Saul's javelin attempts and things like that. And so it is some that suppose that the Amalekite said, "I'll get into the good graces of the king if it be that I took Saul, his enemy's, life." Well, that doesn't turn out to be the case. David had him murdered for what he had done. David had him killed for what he had done. Putting his hand against the Lord's anointed was not something David was viewing favorably. Nonetheless, There's an interesting little twist to this. That Saul had been told to destroy every Amalekite. Don't leave one breathing. And if this is an account where the Amalekite did take Saul's life, even if it was his own request, he was a man that shouldn't have even been there had Saul been obedient. Had Saul been obedient to God and done what he said, that man wouldn't have been there. And it's an interesting little thought to mull around in your mind those things that we do today in the way of incomplete obedience or outright disobedience. Often will come back around and haunt you later. Well, that all being said, the people assumed, and naturally assumed, that Saul's son would very normally assume the throne. Saul's son is Ishbosheth. 2 Samuel 2, David is now trying to figure out where he fits into the scheme. He knows he's been anointed by Samuel. He knows he's next in line to the throne. He's been doing everything he can do to not hasten that process. So he inquires of the Lord, okay, Lord, is it now that I should be king? What should I do? Okay, 2 Samuel 2, and it came to pass after this that David inquired of the Lord, saying, shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah? And the Lord said unto him, go up. And David said, whither shall I go up? And he said unto Hebron. So David went up thither, and his two wives also, Ahinoam and Jezreelias, and Abigail, Nabal's wife, the Carmelite, and his men that were with him did David bring up, every man with his household, and they dwelt in the cities of Hebron. And the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king, notice this, over the house of Judah. And they told David, saying that the men of Jabesh Gilead were they that buried Saul. And David sent messengers unto the men of Jabesh Gilead and said unto them, blessed be ye of the Lord that ye have showed this kindness unto your Lord, even unto Saul, and have buried him. And now the Lord show you kindness and truth unto you, and I also will requite you this kindness because ye have done this thing. Therefore now let your hands be strengthened, and be ye valiant, for your master Saul is dead, and also the house of Judah have anointed me king over them. So David sends greeting and thanks to those that had properly taken care of Saul's body. David lets them know that the house of Judah has made me king. Just the house of Judah, you see, not the complete nation of Israel. We go on and we read in 2 Samuel 2, 8 through 10. And Abner, the son of Ner, captain of Saul's host, took Ish-bosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him over to Mahanaim, and made him king over Gilead, and over the Asherites, and over Jezreel, and over Ephraim, and over Benjamin, and over all of Israel. Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel, and reigned 2 years, but the house of Judah followed David. So, you've no doubt heard of the divided kingdom, and the 10 tribes and the 2 tribes. Well, we're not there yet, but we're showing signs of the division that is in the country. The actual divided kingdom comes later, after Solomon. But right now, what you have is Judah recognizing probably the hand of God on David. David, knowing his call to that office, inquiring of God, what do I do? Saul's dead. Is now the time? And I don't think he's inquiring of the Lord in the sense that it's mine. Let me have it now. I don't think it's like that. There's nothing that indicates that at all. David's actually going to wait another 7 years to be king over all of Israel. Notice verse 11, the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. Verse 11 there, chapter 2, verse 11. And so David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah, 7 years, 6 months. He'd already waited 7 years since Samuel told him that he's going to be king. And so before he's king of Israel, he's waited about 14 years. I rather think that his inquiry of the Lord was just a humble servant saying, okay, Lord, where do you want me? There's no indication of any other thing than that. Lord, where do you want me? Lord said, go to Hebron. Rule over the house of Judah. The people that installed Ishbosheth, Saul's son, they did what naturally seemed right to them. This man was heir to the throne. And if they weren't walking as closely to the Lord as they should have been, they might not have been seeing what God was doing with David. I don't know what all went into that. But I do know that after 7.5 years, of course, it appears as though Ishbosheth died and only reigned a couple years. But there's a time that the people of all of Israel come to David and said, okay, be our king. And we'll see that, I think, tonight as we go forward. 2 Samuel chapter 3, verse 1. Now there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. But David waxed stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul waxed weaker and weaker. You have David presiding over Judah, and you have Saul's son, Ishbosheth, presiding over the rest of the nation of Israel. And there's basically a civil war. And it seemed to go on probably about 5 years. And I say that because after 7 years, the whole outfit comes to David and says, you be our king. What the people are beginning to see then is the house of Saul is leading them and has led them in the wrong direction. And David is following God and leading them in the right direction. And they eventually seem to recognize that. What I want you to notice about this is that David never seems to be manipulating the circumstances to get what's due him. We are so good sometimes at trying to manipulate circumstances to get what we think we've got coming, or to get our fair share, or whatever. What's most important, first of all, is that we know we're right with God. And that God is working out the circumstances. And David, knowing that God's man Samuel had already anointed him, David, you're going to be king. Now, David doesn't have to micromanage his way to the throne. David has to be discerning as to how God is using him and when and where and all those things. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Lean not to thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Proverbs 3, 5 and 6. When we begin to lean on our own understanding, we begin to try to manipulate circumstances. We try to manipulate others that we can work our way into what's perceived to be ours, or work our way out of trouble or whatever. But David knew he was in God's place at God's time. Saul's dead. Lord, what would you have me do? You want me to rule over Hebron, or over in Hebron, over the house of Judah? What? You tell me. I had this situation once at Fairborn that A man had made a false accusation against me. Fortunately, there were several around that were privy to what the fellow was talking about. And it was just a casual thing that had taken place at a fellowship. And the fellow made an accusation against me. And finally, it escalated to the point where we actually, as a church body, went into the fellowship hall and they basically put me on trial. And this man was the prosecuting attorney. And he began to speak. And he began to fabricate all these things that I had supposedly done and said and all this. And I just sat there and I let him speak. And there were those that were there that night and they said, "He's lying. Stop him." No, I'm not going to stop him. God knows what's right and wrong here. God knows who's telling the truth and who's not. God will take care of this. And I just sat there and it was the hardest thing in the world to do. But I just sat there and I let him go. And one man, when he got all done, he stood up and said, "What about this?" That was it. He hit the ceiling and said he didn't have to put up with this pack of liars any longer, and he ran out the door and never came back. I didn't have to say anything. I knew that he was telling a lie. I didn't have to get in there and micromanage the situation. I just had a piece about letting God work the details out. God gave grace. That's not the strength of Randy. That's the strength of God working. And he worked that detail out. And I see David doing something like this. He's just sitting back and he's letting God work it out. You know? And there might have been those that are elbowing David and saying, "David, the throne is yours. Go take it." Not until God tells me to take it. This will work out and I'm not going to force the situation. That's a good lesson for us. You figure out where God is, you figure out what God's doing, and let him work out the details. Now, there's always that fine line of being responsible and proactive and all those things. You have to balance that and figure it out in your own mind, what the Lord would have you to do in every circumstance. That's where you just pray for the wisdom of the Holy Spirit to lead you. But David here seeks the Lord, gets the Lord's leadership, tells him to go to Hebron, doesn't seem to be micromanaging the situation at all. Ishbosheth dies, well, he's murdered. 2 Samuel 4, 5 through 12. Verse 4, 2 Samuel 5, 4. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. And in Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months. And in Jerusalem, he reigned 30 and 3 years over all Israel and Judah. And the king and his men went to Jerusalem unto the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, which spake unto David, saying, "Except thou take away the blind and the lame, thou shalt not come in hither." Thinking David cannot come in hither. Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, the same city as the same is the city of David. And David said, "On that day, whosoever getteth up to the gutter and smiteth the Jebusites and the lame and the blind that are hated of David's soul, he shall be chief and captain." Wherefore they said, "The blind and the lame shall not come into the house." So David dwelt in the fort and called it the city of David. And David built round about from Milo and inward. And David went on and grew great, and the Lord of hosts was with him. Let's see. Oh, I was reading. I'm sorry, I was reading out of chapter 5, and I meant to be reading out of chapter 4. chapter 4 and verse 5. I knew it wasn't looking right. And the sons of Rimmon, the Reuethite, Rechab, and Bana went out and came in the heat of the day to the house of Ishbosheth, who lay on a bed at noon, and they came hither unto the midst of the house as though they would have fetched wheat, and they smote him. Remember, this is Ishbosheth, the king. They smote him under the fifth rib. And Rechab and Bana, his brother, escaped. For when they came into the house, he lay on his bed in his bedchamber, and they smote him and slew him and beheaded him and took his head and gat them away through the plain all night. And they brought the head of Ishbosheth unto David to Hebron, and said to the king, Behold the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, thine enemy, which sought thy life. And the Lord hath avenged my lord, the king, this day of Saul and his seed. And David answered Rechab and said, Bana his brother, the sons of Rimmon the Berothite, and said unto them, As the Lord liveth, who redeemed my soul out of all adversity, when one told me, saying, Behold, Saul is dead, thinking to have sought good tidings, I took hold of him and slew him in Ziklag, who thought that I would have given him reward for his tidings. How much more, when wicked men have slain a righteous person in his own house upon his bed, shall I not therefore now require his blood of your hand and take you away from the earth? And David commanded his young men, and they slew them, cut off their hands and their feet, and hanged them up over the pool in Hebron. But they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it in the sepulcher of Abner in Hebron. So twice now, folks have come to David and said, Hey, I bumped off your enemy, and figuring that would be a good thing in the sight of David. And twice those that came to David with that kind of a tale found themselves no longer living at the hands of David, because David was not a man that wanted to micromanage the situation. David was not a man that wanted to run ahead of the Lord. David had a high value on God's anointed man, and until God worked and showed the children of Israel that Saul nor Saul's house would any longer be on the throne, David wasn't going to be a part of that kind of thing. 2 Samuel 5 is where I was supposed to be reading in the first five verses. Then came all the tribes of Israel to David unto Hebron and spake. Notice now, see, the whole outfit's ready. The whole of the nation of Israel is ready to have David as their king. God had been preparing David. But God is always working on all sides of every issue. And God not only has been preparing David, but he's been preparing the people to receive David. And now all the tribes of Israel come to David in Hebron, spake, saying, Behold, we are thy bone and thy flesh. Also in time past, when Saul was king over us, thou wast he that led us out and broughtest in Israel. And the Lord said unto thee, Thou shalt feed my people Israel, and thou shalt be a captain over Israel. So all the elders of Israel came to the king in Hebron, and King David made league with them in Hebron before the Lord. And they anointed David king over Israel, all of Israel. David was 30 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 40 years. So he was about 23 when he slew Goliath, and Samuel anointed him the first time. 7 years later, he's anointed again as king over Hebron, or over Judah in Hebron. And then again, now, all of them, the whole outfit of Israel has made him to be their king. They came to him. They wanted it. God had worked in them to see this. While David is ruling Israel, the nation reaches an incredible high. They're conquering many, many peoples around them that they're supposed to. It's not a bad thing. These are things they were supposed to be doing. They were growing as a nation. They were becoming wealthy as a nation. David oversaw the return of the ark back. The ark had been out and been stolen, been out of the house for years. Many good things happened under the rule of David. David united the kingdom. David led them in a godly manner. David was used to prepare the temple, to prepare the materials for the temple. He had wanted to build the temple. He'd wanted to oversee the building of the temple. And God said, no, you've been a man of war, and I don't want my temple being built by a man of war. Now, he wasn't being disobedient. He wasn't being chastised for that. It's just a fact. God had called him to be a man of war, and he didn't want him to be the builder of the temple. But he said, you can prepare the materials and gather the materials and get it ready to be built. And then Solomon actually built the temple and oversaw its building and then was there at the dedication of the temple. But it's interesting to note that so important was David in the plan of God that the Bible refers the lineage in Matthew chapter 1 of Christ right away in the first verse, son of David. Matthew 1:1, son of David. And Matthew's the gospel that presents Christ as king. And so immediately the genealogy in Matthew 1 says, Jesus, the son of David. And 9 times, if I remember correctly, in Matthew's gospel alone, son of David. City of David is a phrase. So very important is David in the plan of God. We've emphasized tonight the strong characteristics of David and the successes of David. David was a man. And in the scheme of things, we know David had some very serious failures. It would seem that the situation with Bathsheba came at about midpoint in his time as king. He reigned 40 years, and somewhere in the mid to maybe past the midway point a little bit that he had the situation with Bathsheba. And that was something that scarred his kingship drastically. Obviously scarred his testimony, scarred him personally. We get into this idea that we can sometimes live any way we want and then somehow along the line say, Jesus, I'm sorry. And it just all goes away. Or I've even had it used, 2 Corinthians 5:17, all things have become new. As if at the point of salvation, the slate should be wiped completely clean. There's one problem with that. Sin scars, and those scars we carry with us. And the scars of David's actions with Bathsheba and subsequent actions with her husband and all that went on, those scars scarred David that went on with him the rest of his life. We always have to remember that there's a great cost for sin. And even David, a man described by God as a man after my own heart, he got away from God. He got lazy. You remember the incomplete obedience that I talked to you about back many times through the judges, the incomplete obedience with Saul and the Amalekites. It was really incomplete obedience that got to David. Eventually, he was home when he wasn't supposed to be home. He was at home when he was out, supposed to be out with his troops. And that same man that just took and cut off the corner of Saul's garment just to prove that I'd been there and I could have taken your life, but I didn't. That same man, the Bible tells us when he cut off the corner of Saul's garment, his heart smote him. He felt great conviction, for he felt like he'd raised his hand against God's anointed. Later in his life, he has an adulterous affair with a woman and his heart doesn't smote him. He has her husband murdered and his heart doesn't smote him. He tries to cover it all up every which way of Sunday and his heart doesn't smote him. Not until the prophet of God comes and sticks his finger in his face and said, "Thou art the man." He had drifted away from God. He had demonstrated those cycles that the judges remind us of. And he had demonstrated to us, to you and to me, how important it is that we stay close to God and tender, constantly saying, "Lord, what would you have me to do?" You cannot look at the victory you had yesterday. You cannot look at the victory you had last week. You're living today. I'm living today. And somewhere David forgot that. And it cost him immeasurably. His own son trying to kill him and make a laughingstock of him. His kingdom is scarred for the rest of his days. And so we should remember the lessons that we learned there with the judges and with Saul's incomplete obedience, with David's incomplete obedience. May we always give God the first and the best and just strive to stay close and tender. Lord willing, next week we'll look at the end of David's rule as king and see his son, Solomon, as he rules as king. Let's pray.